This is Scorebook Live Today, a podcast about high school sports across the state of Washington. It's Thursday, January 30th, 2020. I'm Andy Bueller. With me, a special guest. He's formerly the Mariners beat writer, the prep sports extraordinaire for the Tacoma News Tribune. He's now a basketball coach at Puyallup High School, as well as a teacher and a freelance sports writer. He's TJ Cotterill, and he's here with me now. TJ, thanks for joining, and how you doing?
Extraordinaire. Wow, Andy. You're becoming my best friend. You call me Ace. Listen, on Twitter. Extraordinary here. Like, can we just be best friends? Can we call that official?
Listen, I didn't spend a summer interning under your tutelage to not call you an extraordinaire. I did the research. I put in the time, and that's not an empty phrase.
At some point, we got to tell all your listeners about our work with you preparing me for our South Sound quarterback competition, and you out there catching passes with our tennis ball with the GoPro on your head to test us out. So at some point, that'll be a story.
I'm surprised no like area coaches like called asked if I had any eligibility left. I'm genuinely surprised.
Me too.
But so we've got a packed episode lined up. Later on, Dan Dickow catches up with University of San Diego coach Sam Scholl, who has Washington High School ties, as well as Skagit Valley boys basketball coach Carl Howell. And if you haven't listened to Monday's show, I'd highly recommend it. Our Dan Dickow recounted his favorite memories playing against Kobe Bryant in the NBA in the wake of Bryant's tragic death. But now we're going to talk about something fun. TJ, you're a contributor to Scorebook Live, the Seattle Times, Baseball America, and today you're here to talk about one of my favorite projects we've run on the site in its more than 1 year lifetime, the Washington High School Boys Basketball All-Decade Team. So it's up on the site now, scorebooklive.com/Washington, but walk me through just how you came up with the idea to do this list.
Man, there's some really cool names on that list, aren't there? Like, just guys you're going like, wow, I remember seeing him play, or like, I see him play on TV now. Like, this is a legitimate list, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, there's no question.
Yeah, that was kind of, I was thinking about this when I used to be the prep coordinator at the News Tribune. And I remember it was like 2018 or 19. We obviously just seen Michael Porter. And the year before that, we had, DeJounte Murray and Jalen Noel, and we've obviously had seen like Zach LaVine and these guys going like, man, I remember thinking about then, like when Michael Porter was just like putting an onslaught in the state that season when they won the state title for Nathan Hale. I was just like, wouldn't it be so cool to like, who would be your starting five of like the best players this decade? Like, I can't wait for a couple of years when we get to do that story. And fortunately, you guys allowed me to do it for Scorebook Live and put a ton of research into it. The hardest part was like, how do you put Tony Roten over Devontae Lacey, or how do you decide with Joe Harris should be in the starting lineup over Zach LaVine? Like, that kind of stuff was like really fun for me. Obviously, it's also kind of nerve-wracking, and you want to make sure you have arguments for each of it. But the thought process was like, okay, let's take 2010 to 2019. Obviously, guys like Joe Harris, when he played at Chelan, he's now at the Brooklyn Nets. His senior year was in 2010. So it's like, well, do you count only his final year? Do you take his whole career into consideration? And you have to do the same thing for Josh Smith, the 300-pound center for Kentwood, who like dominated four all-state teams in 4 years at Kentwood, was a McDonald's All-American, went on to UCLA, eventually Georgetown. Obviously, career didn't pan out like Joe Harris's has, but his senior season was also in 2010. So I just thought, well, let's just take, if you played in the decade, doesn't matter if you graduate in 2010 or you're a sophomore in 2019, let's just take what you've done and put all your resumes down here and give it its due justice, and let's see like how these guys would stack up only based on their high school careers. Like, you'll see Josh Smith on here as a starter. But obviously his pro career didn't pan out the same as Zach LaVine's has. It could be an all-star this year with the Chicago Bulls. But how were they in high school? If you were forming like a high school team, you had their 4 years, you're going to build a program. Like, who are the guys that you want on your team? And that I think was the criteria I was looking for in putting this all-decade team together.
So that's an interesting point, because, you know, Michael Porter Jr. who is on here, and of course he had one illustrious year at Nathan Hale. And you know, you covered that year. You covered him. You watched him up close, and you saw just how he took over the state and the legacy he left in that year. Was there ever any – was someone like him who has this small sample size – you know, I'll throw Paolo Banchero in there because he hasn't fully completed his career yet either. Guys like that, was there any hesitation to, you know, maybe kind of give the nod to, some, you know, a Gary Bell Jr., a Zach LaVine, a Jaden McDaniels, someone who's put in 4 years and had, you know, maybe a more complete body of work?
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the tougher ones. It was like, how do you judge Michael Porter Jr., who's not even from Washington, moved here from Missouri after his junior year because his dad was going to be an assistant with Lorenzo Romar, or was an assistant with Lorenzo Romar at UW for Romar's final year. And you go, okay, well, Porter was here 1 year, and in that 1 year, he was National Gatorade Player of the Year, averaged 36 points per game, 14 rebounds per game, went undefeated, won the state title over a really talented Garfield team. Like, okay, well, how do you gauge that with, you know, someone like Gary Bell, who had a great senior season, scored over 2,000 points for his career? And do you judge the 4 years or the 1 year? I was under the mindset of, I would rather take a guy who had one incredible season over a guy who had four good seasons. So obviously you have to balance those two out. Well, as these really good seasons balance out with like one incredible season. My thought process was, I would rather have a guy in his prime than a guy who was good for 4 years. Now, other people might do it differently. But that was how I was looking at it. And, man, you look at Porter's year though here. Oh my gosh. You can't look back on the decade if you're going to look back on the best teams and players from 2010-19 and not remember what Michael Porter Jr. did that year. I mean, I remember talking to Mike Bethay, the coach at Rainier Beach, for a state player of the year story on Michael Porter. And I was like, when's the last, he's had a ton of guys. Obviously DeJounte Murray's on here, who he coached. Kevin Porter's on here. Shaquan Aaron was a state player of the year, a guy I was considering for this list and didn't make it on here. But he's had three state player of the years in this decade, plus Nate Robinson before that, and Doug Christie, Jamal Crawford, like tons of guys. I'm like, Mike, like who is Michael Porter in the season that he had? Like, what did he remind you of? And he's like, to be honest, it was when I went and traveled to the East Coast to see a guy named LeBron James play Carmelo Anthony in high school. He was,
oh, come on.
He was like this. Like, the last time I've seen a guy dominate at this level like that was LeBron James playing for St. Vincent St. Mary. And this is a guy who's like seen every great basketball player ever out of Seattle. And the only player you could think of was LeBron James, who obviously wasn't from Seattle. So it's like, that was an incredible season for Michael Porter. Like the show he put on, the state championship game, capping off with like some like incredible dunks, had like NBA 3-point range. Obviously like in the semifinals against Lincoln, he volleyball spiked a shot from Lincoln into like the third row in the stands. One of the most packed games I've ever been to was that Lincoln Nathan Hale game. So you can't look back in the decade and not remember the season that Michael Porter Jr. had.
No question. And one of the things I really like about the list, the ones that made your starting lineup and your bench, in addition to the fan vote that's at the end of this story, where, you know, if you're reading this, if you're listening to what TJ is saying, and you're saying, you know, I completely disagree. I saw this, you know, X player, Y player play, and I think they should be ranked above. Well, you can create your own all decade team in a form at the very end of the story. There's a large list of players who all of them should come to mind if you've paid attention to college high school basketball in the state of Washington. But one of the things I really like about that pool of players is just how many are from classifications outside of the big ones. You know, you've got, you know, Corey Kispert at 1A. You've got, I mean, how can you forget Brock Reve's senior season, or his entire career, but particularly the last couple of years. But Reve actually made your list. What went into adding him?
Yeah, with Brock Reve, it was like, again, you think back on the decade, what are you going to remember most? Well, like, there was a kid out in Kittitas named Brock Reve who set the state scoring record with 3,100 career points. Now, it's so hard because he obviously did it at the 2B level. And how do you compare a guy who did that to someone like a Jason Todd at Jackson, who won back-to-back Gatorade State Player of the Years? And he didn't make this list either. Or Jaden McDaniels, who was at Federal Way and obviously was one of the top five recruits in the nation first class. How do you compare Brock Rivet to those guys? And obviously, we're really looking forward to seeing how his game moved on to Gonzaga, and now he's no longer there. But so that was really a hard question. But it's like, again, you're thinking back on the decade, what do you remember most? Well, Brock Rivet, we have no idea how he compares to the guys at the 4A level. But I think personally he'd more than hold his own. I mean, if you're going to ask a guy to go play in 2B basketball and you're an elite player, well, what does that have to look like? Well, he probably is going to average a triple-double. He's probably going to win 3 state titles, if not more. And he's going to set a state scoring record. And check, like I put in the story, like Brock Rivet did all those things. So what more are you asking of him to do? So we had to make an exception for Brock Rivet. He had to be on this list just because you can't not. And another tough one to not have on here was Isaiah Brown, who played at Lakeside, who then went on to Northwestern. Is no longer there, but he's still playing. I think he's at Grand Canyon now. And he set the Metro League's career scoring record with over 2,300 career points playing for Lakeside of Seattle. And so that was another tough one. Malachi Flynn, who beat Avery Bradley's single-season scoring record at Bellarmine, who's now on the wooden watch list at San Diego State this year. He was a tough one to leave off. Matisse Thybul, who had a great career at UW and now is playing great with the 76ers. Like, there were a lot of guys who were really tough to leave off this. And I tend to a lot of coaches, like, you know, who are my biggest snubs on here? Who am I not including? And the toughest part is, like, who did you replace him with? And there's been a lot of great players of this decade. And that's the fun part, is a lot of the fans can now go, or readers can go look on Scorebook Live and make choices for themselves and try to do the job I did, which was certainly not easy.
Scorebooklive.com/Washington is where you can find that list. The top of the page shouldn't be hard to find. And I'm looking forward to, I think I might go vote again. I voted this morning and now I've had some time. I've heard you out and I might go and just make my own team on over again. I recommend you do the same. He's TJ Cotterill at TJ Cotterill on Twitter. TJ, it was great having you. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks for having me. We'll do it again.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Sam Scholl, University of San Diego head coach, and then Carl Howell, head coach at Skagit Valley.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington, here with head coach of University of San Diego, Sam Scholl. Sam has a unique backstory. He's got connections to the state of Washington, both as a player as well as many current coaches across the state. So, Sam, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, really appreciate you having me, Dan. This is great.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right into it. You've got Washington roots, even though you're now living in one of the greatest cities in the world, San Diego. You went to Gig Harbor. You won a state title in 96. Tell us about your high school basketball experience and your high school head coach.
Well, my high school basketball experience was an outstanding one. I think about often, even now as a head coach. You know, when I were growing up, you know, there was a group of us, about 10 of us that, you know, 7th, 8th grade, you know, watched Gig Harbor High School basketball team play. And some of our guys in that group had older brothers that were playing, you know, on the varsity team ahead of us. And, you know, when they were going through state tournaments, they had a lot of, you know, 1-2 experiences. Win a game at the T-Dome and then lose the next one and then lose the following one. And, you know, never were able to get a trophy. And, you know, so as we start getting older and getting our opportunity, you know, getting a trophy, you know, at the state tournament, you know, was something that was a big goal for us. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to, you know, get the best trophy of them all when we were seniors. And, you know, my senior year, we were 10 of us seniors on the team. And, you know, still to this day was probably the most selfless, complete team, most connected team that I've ever been a part of. You know, where guys just did not care who scored, who got what, who played what. It was just all about winning and winning the state title. And, you know, that was really led by, that mentality was really led by our high school coach, Lyle McIntosh.
Coach McIntosh must have had a big impression not only on you but your teammates to be able to play in the style that you talked about, being a selfless team, kind of caring for each other. When you look at now, the statistics are 1% of high school athletes will have a chance to play at the Division I level. And this isn't a comment to sway or not people to go after their dreams, but just to keep things in perspective. When you were in high school, I would imagine you had the same dream. But at some point, everybody has to realize, you know what, how do I attack my dream? How do I go about making my dream happen? What did you do to put yourself in that best position to make your dreams happen?
Well, I did have that dream. I wanted to play Division I basketball. That was the ultimate goal. And so during high school, you know, it was just Lyle McIntosh really, Coach McIntosh really just sold me on that. The biggest thing that, you know, to give myself the best chance was to win. You know, we needed to win, you know, and because people at the end of the day in any profession, you know, want to invest in winners. And so, you know, it was all about the work to help myself improve, but it was all in the pursuit of, hey, if we win, you know, good things will happen. And unfortunately, out of high school, wasn't able to get any kind of Division I offers, wasn't good enough. But I still had that dream. And so to go to junior college gave me a second chance at that. You know, and to go play at Tacoma Community College for a great coach and Carl Howe, and have an opportunity, you know, to have two more years to get re-recruited, you know, and just to keep that opportunity to have that chance to play at the Division I level. And, you know, through that time, still wasn't good enough, you know, after my time with Coach Howe. But, you know, Coach McIntosh, back when I was in high school, had instilled in me and given me an opportunity when I was a junior in high school to coach the incoming freshman in a fall high school league. And that's where I really fell in love with coaching, right there in that little mini season in September and October of my junior year, you know, getting to put together my own practices and coach them in a 10-game season. You know, it was where, you know, I first really fell in love. And then Coach McIntosh really, you know, instilled that love in me, you know, throughout my time with him. And then when I was at junior college, you know, during my first 2 years at Tacoma Community College, I was spending time with him, coaching their summer league teams. And, you know, just any opportunity I could get to coach, you know, Coach McIntosh was giving me that chance. And so, you know, after I was done with junior college, it still wasn't good enough to, you know, want that or get that Division I scholarship. I still just wanted to be a part of Division I basketball. I knew I wanted to coach that level. And so Coach Howe, you know, put me in touch with the coaches here at University of San Diego, gave me an opportunity to walk on and have a great Division I basketball experience. And that led to, you know, an opportunity to coach after.
So you've been involved with the West Coast Conference for a number of years in different capacities and at different schools. You are now in your second full season as a head coach at USD. What is the biggest takeaway that you can take or that you can share about the difference of being a high school player, being a college player, and then now being a college coach? Because I think there's a lot of times, you know, people don't understand the time commitments or the roles that different people have.
Yeah, no, it's everything just gets amped up, and you know, once you go from being a high school player to a college player, everything, the speed, the strength of the players that you're playing against, even in the jump from high school to Tacoma Community College, there was a jump in the quickness that I was facing on a daily basis, and it was eye opening. So then it causes you now to, okay, you gotta adjust, you gotta work harder, you gotta figure out ways where you can still be an impactful player on the floor. With this next jump, and then especially going from junior college to the Division I level, and then it got a whole lot stronger because now you're playing against, you know, guys older guys, 23, 24 year olds, you know. So there's just the continued jumps in the things that you have to take your game to, and I think you have to prepare for, you know, and you know, the stuff that you do in high school, you know, gets you in the door, but it doesn't make you, you know, give you opportunity to succeed. You have to go now, take it a step further and work even harder to be able to continue to be an impactful player and a player that can help your team win. And then going from player to coach is crazy because, you know, just the time that's spent on a daily basis on trying to prepare your team to succeed, prepare individuals to play to their best abilities and to prepare your team to win. You know, this past Wednesday, we had this whole week off. We don't play until tomorrow. And so on Wednesday, we gave our team, we play Santa Clara, we gave our team the film on Wednesday and said, all right, do the scouting report. This is our game from them last time. And a lot of the comments after were like, gosh, that took a long time. And we're like, yeah, it was part of the deal. We wanted you to be able to see like the time commitment that goes into the preparation for winning.
I love that little kind of bit about having the players jump in and do a scouting report. I think that's something that many players at all levels don't understand, the time, the passion, the energy, and the knowledge that coaches pour in to prepare for each game. And you as a head coach have a lot of things that you have to prepare for. I know you can't talk about current recruits, but as a head coach at the college level, you have your eye. Certain players, certain athletes fit your eye for your program, how they would fit. What are some of the key non-negotiables for you when you look at a player that's going to make you really want to recruit that athlete and get them to play for you at the University of San Diego?
That's a great question. And I think the first thing that we look at is character. We're watching very, very closely and probably being overcritical at times of body language, of responses to bad things that happen to the game, to responses to good things that happen in the game, to how they are as a teammate. Are they a guy that when they come off the floor, high fives all their teammates, or are they kind of doing that limp hand thing, you know, that got some guys do when they walk off the floor? You know, how they are with officials. You know, how do they compete? You know, and on a possession to a possession basis, you know, are they competing offensively, but then when it comes down to the defensive end, are they not competing? You know, all those things we have to be so mindful of and be certain of and know what you're getting with a young athlete, a young player, because that's the stuff when they come to your program that you're going to have to a know coming in the door. Okay, this is where they're at on these things, and then B, so that you can help them, because when it gets, you know, there's many, many times of adversity, and that's where their true character is going to show. And so we have to watch and critique that as much as we possibly can. And then after that, obviously, for us, is the skill level. How well can you dribble, pass, and shoot? And there's, it's crazy. You would think at the Division I level, everybody can dribble, pass, and shoot. And that's really not the case. And in fact, the guys that can do all three of those things are the all-league players. You know, and a good conference as the West Coast Conference is. You know, lots of times you're happy as a coach if you get a guy that can do two of the three really well. And there's a lot of guys at Division I level that, you know, really only do one of the three well. And so, you know, we're trying to find guys that can do as dribble, pass, and shoot at the best of their abilities, and can make a lot of different shots, can score in a lot of different places on the floor, can make shots off the dribble, can make catch and shoot threes. Then the passing thing is critical. You know, how do guys take a lot of pride in hitting the teammate where he can make a play each and every time? So, you know, the character and the skill level, obviously you got to have some athleticism because our conference is a very, very athletic league. But you got to have great character. You got to be a winner. You got to be a competitor. Got to be a great teammate. Then you got to have a great skill level.
Yeah, I love how you talk about character first, because it doesn't matter how skilled a player is or how athletic, if they don't have the character to be coached and to fit in, they're going to have a difficult time having success. Absolutely. Not only at the high school level, but the college level. So, Sam, we really appreciate you joining the podcast this week. We wish you nothing but the best of luck as the season continues on down at USD. And enjoy that sunshine, because the winter in Washington's been pretty cold, wet, and rainy.
Dan, I really appreciate it, and it's been awesome. When I was in junior college, I was watching you at the state tournament at Prairie High School, man. And so it's been really, really cool following your career and everything that you're doing and that you did as a player, and then now that you're doing in the professional world. It's been very impressive, so I really appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks again, and have a great day.
You too, Dan. Thanks, buddy.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington, here with a special guest this week on our podcast, Skagit Valley head coach, longtime Tacoma Community College head coach, Carl Howell. Carl's a guy who's been around the high school and college basketball scene in the state for quite some time. So thanks for joining us, Carl.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
No, it's been great to talk hoops with you over the last couple of years as we continue to expand what we're doing with Scorebook Live. And I think you've got a really interesting and unique perspective that a lot of coaches, parents, and players can hear because you've had success at the junior college level as a coach. You've been a director of Washington Supreme, a really high-level AAU program. And you know the game. There's lots of coaches at the AAU level that don't know the game. You know the game. You know the game at the college level as well. And so I'd like to take this time to hear a little bit about your path and how your knowledge can be a resource for a lot of players and coaches and parents that are in the middle of the process of wanting to play college basketball. So first off, I guess let's get right started. First question would be, every player, every coach, their path is different. How did you get into coaching?
Yeah, no, it's funny you say that. I tell our guys that all the time. Every team I've ever coached, when they start worrying about like recruiting and stuff, is everybody's path is different. I was unique. I went to Morton High School, a little town down by Mount Rainier, you know, and we went to the state tournament in Spokane, which was, you know, a huge treat for us, as you can imagine. And, you know, I was very fortunate. We had, you know, Bill Backmas, who's the coach of Mark Morris, was 5 or 6 years older than me. And we had a guy named Daryl Gross, who I think might be the school's all-time leading scorer. And we had some of those guys that were older that I just kind of hung out with and played with. And just, you know, had a love for the game. And, you know, when I was a senior, I was recruited by, you know, a lot of NWAC schools. And I really wanted to go to Skagit Valley because they had just won the NWAC title, and our teams at Morton had always been good. Winning was always important to me, and Skagit had a great coach, one of my mentors, Coach Kwall, and came up here, and, you know, I always tell people I was not a great player, and there's a lot of very good coaches that aren't, and so I was here for a year, and then the late Gil Coleman went over to Central Washington as an assistant. Gil Coleman was from Morton, where I'm from. And I told him I wanted to get into coaching. He says, well, you need to come over here and play as long as you can play. And then, you know, Coach Nick, Dean Nicholson, the Hall of Fame coach at Central, you know, he'll take care of you. So I went over and kind of bounced between, you know, played JV and got to practice once in a while with varsity at Central. But, you know, we were a top 10 team at that time. So I was never going to be an impact player. So after that, I went home and worked for a summer and had an opportunity to work with Ron Billings, who used to be the coach at Tacoma Community College. He convinced me to stay and take classes at UPS and coach with him for a couple years. And then I went back to Central as an assistant and went into graduate school and was there. Then I was named the head coach at Tacoma Community College when I was like 25 or 26. Coached there for 10 years, had a great run, went and worked for Ray Jacoletti at Eastern. Great experience, went to the NCAA tournament. Also coached with Mike Burns and then had the opportunity to go back to Tacoma as the AD and the basketball coach. Did that. We kind of picked up where we left off, won a couple more championships. And then I got out of it and started working with Under Armour. And the next thing you know, they wanted me to start an AAU program up here. And so Chris Spivey and I, who's the women's coach at Annie Wright School, great guy, he used to run Team Access. We started Washington Supreme and just kind of, you know, went from there. And then, had an opportunity to come back to my alma mater and coach at Skagit. So that's kind of the time frame of my career for the most part.
It's always so interesting for me to hear how small the basketball world is and the network is. when you talk about the progression of you as a coach and the places that you've been, and how connected different coaches are. If there's a young player out there that's, you know, has dreams of being in coaching, what would your advice be to that player when, you know, they're maybe at a tournament or they just finished playing against a league opponent? Is there anything that can replace, you know, a handshake and an introduction and building your network to, if you want to become a coach at a young age?
Oh, yeah, no, I think you want to introduce yourself. And the one thing is now that I'm older, you know, you love to see young coaches who have the passion like, you know, people in my area used to have, I think, you know, is the best way to put it, and are always willing to help those kind of people. I mean, I think back to this day, and if it wouldn't have been for Dave Wall and Dean Nicholson, Gil Coleman, you know, I would have never had a chance. And they saw a young guy who loved the game and had a good work ethic, and it gave me that opportunity. And, you know, I told people, you know, guys that want to be coaches. We had a kid on our Washington Supreme Team last year, I think, would be, you know, wants to go into coaching. I think he'd be an outstanding coach. And I said, look, you know, not to rain on your parade, but you're not going to play at a high, high level of college. So, you know, what you probably want to do is go somewhere that's been successful, play as long as you can, and then really try and get into coaching. And I think the best advice I could give is, if you want to get into coaching, go somewhere and be a student assistant where the head coach is legendary or won a ton of games, because that coach is going to have some juice when it comes to you getting another job. You know, it's just kind of how the world works, you know. I mean, you have to use Gonzaga as a prime example. Look at the guys that went through there and where they're at, you know.
Absolutely. One of the things that, you know, you having been around the high school game at the state for a number of years, both obviously playing and then kind of coaching at the different levels that you shared, is you've seen high school programs and you've seen high school players for quite some time here in the state. Is there any one or two players that just jumps out at you and says, man, that player was absolutely unbelievable? Or maybe it was also an under-the-radar guy that maybe just missed for some reason?
Yeah, I think, I mean, well, first of all, I can't comment on anybody that's still in high school, so that's going to leave, you know, somebody out, obviously. But I would say this. I've always said I thought Jamal Crawford, when he was a junior, was the most impressive high school player I'd ever seen. Not that he wasn't dominant as a senior, but I just remember seeing him as a junior year and just thinking, man, that's like the best high school player I've ever seen in Washington. Now, there's a lot of guys. I mean, you look at Adam Morris, you know, you look at, I can just go on and on, Martell Webster, Hawes, Brock Stuckey, you know, I'm sure I'm leaving people out, Aaron Brooks, Jason Terry, Donald Moss. I mean, there's just, yeah, I've had a chance to see all those guys. You know, I think maybe some of the younger people out there probably don't understand the level of players we've had from this state. It's just, you know, Brandon Roy, geez, I almost forgot him. I mean, you just, you know, there's so many of them that unless you sit and write them down, you know, you're going to miss guys.
Absolutely. I mean, there has been a tremendous number of successful college and NBA players from the state. And the high school basketball at this level in this state, I think, is very, very good. I've had a chance to see games across the country over the last few years, and I think Washington stacks up. And I think one of the reasons why would be the coaches at the high school level here in the state are very good. Would you agree with that comment?
Oh, absolutely. I think from, you know, clearly, you know, Seattle with its population and the number of professional players that have came out of Seattle, you know, people think of Seattle first, and rightly so. But at the same time, if you look at some of the coaches we have in our state, in the Spokane area, in the Vancouver area, you know, Tacoma area, you know, up north here where I'm at, I mean, you can basically go to every, you know, part of our state and find, you know, tremendous coaches. And I agree with you. I do think that's kind of what separates Washington.
there's a fine line and a balance for a player when they're in a recruiting process of leaning on their high school coach as well as understanding and knowing how the AAU process works. You've got, with your time at Under Armour and now, you know, being a director of Washington Supreme, you've got an innate understanding for how that world works. For somebody who isn't involved with it every single day and you hear some of the negative, you know, headlines about AAU, whether it's this company, that tournament, or how the game is played. For you on the inside, how does the AAU process work? And how does it give players an opportunity to advance to the next level?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say, look, with everything in life, there's good and bad in everything. You know, I mean, there's great AAU coaches, there's great high school coaches, there's great trainers, there's great college coaches, and there's also awful ones. In all of those areas, just like there is in every phase of life, you know, the financial planner, not every financial planner is great. You see people embezzling and stuff all the time. So I just, you know, I hate to see people, you know, talk negatively about not just AAU, but high school coaches, college coaches, trainers, because there's good and bad of everything. And so, you know, that's the first thing. Secondly, you know, AAU is great. It gives you a chance to go and travel the world a little bit and play against kids from out of the area and play against high-level kids. But the reality of it is, I mean, if you're a high-level guy, you know, you're going to get a lot of publicity. You know, you're going to see your rankings rise by these guys that are at these events. But that's a small percentage of the AAU players. You know, there's a lot more mid-major, low-major, Division II AAU players than there is Power 5 conference high-major players. And I think that's kind of the misnomer, is like that, you know, every kid that plays on one of these shoe circuits is, you know, a Power 5 conference player. That's not the case. And you know, the other thing is there's a lot of kids that actually look better and play better with their high school team that they've been playing with for 4 years in a system than they do playing in a couple months with AAU. It's just, every kid's different. Every journey's different. Like I tell our guys all the time, don't compare your recruiting process to another player's because they're all different. You know, some people are great players when they're sophomores. Some don't really get it going until their senior year on their high school team. It's just, you know, I think that's one important message I would send is everybody's journey is different. Don't get caught up in what someone else is.
I think that's a powerful message in the fact that everybody's journey is different. And so many times with recruiting, you know, people and kids and parents are looking over their shoulder to try to compare what other offer was made to somebody else, where they have to understand that, hey, maybe the school that offered that person has a need that's different than the need that you would fulfill as a player. Now, there's always differences in levels, Division 1, 2, 3, NAIs and junior colleges, of how the recruiting process works. You know, if you're a true Division 1 can't miss prospect, you're being recruited early on. Is there any, at what point does, say, a coach like you at the junior college level start becoming interested in the recruiting process of a certain player? How do you go about recruiting at that JC level?
You know, I mean, we identify people when they're juniors, you know, prior to their senior. And here's the other thing. Nowadays, you know, look, is the kid going to qualify? I mean, I think Coach D. Nicholson, you know, it's kind of a funny quote, but it's true. He used to joke about, you know, junior college level. He built his whole program in Central on transfers. And he said, hey, here's the reason why you're at a junior college. There's three reasons, okay? You are, you know, academically you're not where you're supposed to be. You're a knucklehead. Or you're a late bloomer. And he says, 9 times out of 10, that's why a good player will be at a junior college. And again, there's always, you know, not everything's 100%, but I think that's kind of interesting there. And so for us, I mean, you know, we want to get the best players we can get. I mean, I have a couple kids on my team this year. They're Division I type players. And so, you know, for various reasons we have them, but you want to get the best players you can get. And then, you know, my deal in putting together a team is you got to fill roles. I mean, you can't go out and get the 8 best scorers or the 8 most athletic guys or the 8 most skilled guys. I mean, you got to go and put a team together. And I think, like what you spoke about before about, you know, kids and parents worrying about, well, how come this school offered this kid but not my kid or whatever? Well, you know, everybody's putting their team together. And every coach has a different philosophy. And so, you know, I think that's a big thing is how does this player fit in with what we have? You know, like, for example, you're at the Pac-12 level and you're returning 2 Pac-12, all Pac-12 guards, you know, and there's a kid who, you know, is really good, but him and his parents have made it clear that he expects to come in from day one and start. Well, you're probably not going to offer him because it's not going to be a good fit. So there's just all kinds of variables, I think, that way.
Yeah, very, so much knowledge right there in that last answer that unfortunately a lot of people kind of don't understand because, again, there's a lot of information out there that is shared, but it's not always understood in the correct way by people in the industry. So, Carl, we appreciate you joining. It's always good to talk hoops with you. We appreciate you joining and sharing some of the knowledge here. With the Scorebook Live podcast listeners, if there's one last thing that you can leave with us, I would ask you that, in your opinion, who is the greatest basketball coach that has ever lived?
Oh, man. I'm going with Mark Few right now. You're at Spokane, Washington at Gonzaga, and you're the number one team in the country, and you're going to Final Fours based on where that program came from. I've always said the 3 best coaching jobs ever been done in the history of college coaching, in my opinion, are UMass when Calipari was there to turn it into a national power, UConn, who won 3 national titles under Jim Calhoun. No one even heard of UConn before he got there, and Gonzaga. I don't think, you know, the Kansases, Kentuckys, all those Dukes, whatever, all great coaches, all had great success, but they had success for 100 years. And those 3 schools I just named have only had success under a certain person. So,
awesome. Interesting. I love the breakdown of why with those schools. So, again, we appreciate the time, Carl. Best of luck the rest of the season. And, again, thanks for being a part of Scorebook Live. We'll be right back.